Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.podomatic.com. Hello everyone, welcome to Luke's English Podcast. Now in this episode you will hear the continuation of an interview which I did recently with a German comedian called Paco Ehrhardt. He's German but he's been living in London for a few years. He's lived in America for a long time. He speaks very, very good English. And in the last episode, you heard him talking about his experiences as a learner of English and how he learned English, and then how he came to do comedy in English here in London. Now, in this interview, you're going to hear him go on to talk about his show, his comedy show, which is called 5 Steps to Being German. Now, if you want to see that comedy show, you can, as long as you're in the UK. If you want to see it, he's performing it at the Brighton Fringe Festival, and he's performing that on the 9th, the 10th, the 11th, the 16th and the 18th of May at 7:45 p.m. in the Hobgoblin Pub. He's also performing it at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival from the 5th of August until the 28th of August at 6 p.m. in the Three Sisters Gothic Room. I strongly recommend that you check out his show, because it's going to be brilliant. So now listen to Paco talking about his show and then talking about some really interesting cultural facts about German people and about British people. It's obviously very important these days in this global community that we're living in that we get a deeper understanding of cultural attitudes, cultural values, cultural habits between different countries. I think that's one of the most important things that we as individuals need to do in order to operate in a kind of global community, right? So in this episode, you'll hear Paco talking about the German identity. And it's very interesting because he's obviously been thinking about it a lot. And as he's a German who doesn't live in Germany anymore, he's got a bit more of a perspective on it. So you might here learn some things about the German identity that you didn't really expect. You might learn about the stereotype and what is true and what's not so true. And the same for the British identity too, because Paco has been observing British people and British culture while he's been living here. So it's a very interesting interview and I hope you enjoy it very much. That's it from me. Cheers. Enjoy the interview. Bye, 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 bye. So, Paco, you're at the moment preparing yourself to perform there, like, almost every night of the week in August, right? So tell us about your show. What's the show about?
Well, my show is called my 5-Step Guide to Being German.
The 5-Step Guide to Being German.
Yes, right. Supposing that obviously everybody would like to be German.
Yeah, right.
So as you can tell,
that's the premise that first of all everyone wants to be German, right?
Of course, yeah. That's of course a satirical premise, because right. Especially with as most people will know, most British people have lots of stereotypes, about the Germans, and so they. I think it's safe to say that most Brits would say that they would not so much like to be German, which is why, of course, it's a satirical title. Yeah. But that is basically the structure of my show. I imagine or I pretend that I think they all want to be German, and I teach them how.
Okay, it's a good title. Five steps.
Thank
to
you very
German.
Much.
So, I mean. I don't want to just go through your whole show now, but like, can you tell us briefly what those 5 steps are? I don't know if this is secret, because you might have to, listeners. Yeah. If you want to see the show, you have to pay for it. Is it a free show, or do we have to pay?
Well, in Brighton, before I do it in Edinburgh in August, I will be doing 5 shows in Brighton, which is also a great and very.
Do you want some more beer, Paco?
We'll
have 2 more, please. Yes, please. Yes. So thanks very much.
Okay, so basically we're sorted out with beer, which is great. Allowed to hear that we're drinking alcohol?
Sure, why not? This is, it's Luke's English podcast. There are no rules back there.
Oh, right, okay, I see.
I mean, obviously, listeners in certain parts of the world will probably be shocked that we're actually consuming alcohol. You know, I'm thinking, all my listeners in Saudi Arabia or in Iran, I don't know. You know, this is London, and in London we drink beer on a
Did
Wednesday.
The lady not mention that it's alcohol-free beer?
I don't think she did.
No,
yeah.
This is with alcohol.
She's not really cooperating.
It's Japanese beer.
Japanese beer, not yeah. Very much, maybe.
I don't know if that makes a difference.
Thank you.
Anyway. Right. If you're listening to this in a country where drinking beer is not allowed, don't worry, because like in London, not only is it allowed, it's almost kind of mandatory, isn't it?
That it is. You can't
drink beer, really. Yeah. I mean, it's very difficult to go out to a pub, for example, on any night and like not drink beer.
It's difficult to pull that off.
Yeah, it is.
And to be fair, as far as I know, in almost all countries in the world, it is legal to listen to people drink beer a few thousand kilometers away.
I think so, yeah. I think that's...
So you should be safe.
I'm not completely familiar with all of the intricate laws of each nation in the world, but...
Neither am I.
If it's not illegal, then it bloody well should be legal. That's just like getting slightly political.
I think we should probably start a campaign. Make listening to beer drinking legal.
if you're living in some horrific dictatorship, I'm surprised that anyone in a country where it's illegal to listen to other people drinking beer, if anyone from those countries are listening to this, I'm just wondering how they managed to download this, because probably those countries, like the internet,
highly illegal.
I doubt that something as sort of inflammatory and sort of dangerous as Luke's English podcast would be allowed in those countries. So if you are living in one of those kind of places, then well done, well done for just being committed enough to listen to Luke's English podcast. We're very
well
proud.
Done, rock on.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep the faith, keep going, or some other slogan. I don't know what all the slogans are these days.
What do we want? Beer.
What do we want? Listen to people drinking beer. When do we want it? Like quite soon, please.
Yeah.
Within the next 5 minutes.
If at all possible, please. okay, let's make this audible.
Okay, cheers. We're drinking Japanese beer here in a bar, in a hotel in London. We're in a hotel because it's the only quiet spot we could find in this part of London. Somewhere that was appropriate for us to actually record this episode of the podcast.
We were actually in a very interesting pub, because it's a German pub now. Well, of course, they have lots of lovely beer. But at the same time, it's...
we're just talking about beer now.
Well, yeah, we are.
People who are listening to this who can't drink beer, they're just going to be really annoyed.
Oh, will you stop it, please?
It's going to... Anyway, yeah.
But at the same time, that pub is a pub that Charlie Chaplin used to go to a lot. So it's a nice mix of English and German, which is why we originally thought to do the podcast there.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it was just a bit too loud.
It was really loud. They were playing 90s... It was like a 90s music night. And so they were playing stuff like, Smashing Pumpkins and things like that, which is great, but, wouldn't have really helped us record a clear podcast for all you keen learners of English out there who are just loving this podcast.
That's right. Should we get back to the topic?
Yeah, so you're talking about your show.
You might edit this out.
I might just edit that out. I don't know. So you're talking about your show, which is 5 Steps to Becoming German. Right?
Five step guide to being German.
To being German.
I didn't becoming German would have sounded like how to apply for citizenship and get your visa. And
a lot of Turkish people would have been listening to that one. Anyway, yeah, again, a bit political. I'll edit that out. Sorry, carry on.
So basically, it's from that satirical premise. I mean, I can't really tell you the steps because there are, well, at least a few of them, are a bit surprising, hopefully. But what I'm trying to do is I'm going to, well, as you say, take the piss out of the Germans, but also very much out of the British. I want to, basically, I offer a look behind the scenes of German stereotypes because we simply aren't like the English portray us. And, yeah. You know, there's lots of British humour about the Germans that is basically also goes back to stereotypes that are at least 60 years old now and that simply don't apply anymore.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to give them a glimpse into the real German soul and the historical formation of that. And that we're even more ridiculous than they even thought we were. But, you know, all my life, basically, this comes from all my life of being, one of the steps is actually, you know, in order to become German, absolutely hate being German. Because that's what we
Germans do. Germans hate being German.
Yeah, we're not very comfortable with who we are. We'd rather be black. Or, I don't know, something cool.
Okay.
But we don't,
you'd rather be from like Jamaica or something.
Oh yeah, I think we'd go with that. No, yeah. That's, I think all my, because, you know, we've had a difficult history and lots of people look at us in a slightly weird way.
Yeah.
And so basically living in other countries and also pretending to not, well, trying to get rid of my German accent, I think I've been running from being German for a long time, and only recently have I started to realize that is just about the most German thing I could possibly do.
Okay, so the show is really about exploring German stereotypes and telling audiences what they.
I interject there? It's not really about the stereotypes. No, it's basically, it's about me discovering how we really are, because we don't really know it ourselves.
Right.
So I discover the real Germany behind the stereotypes, really.
Right.
I don't talk about the stereotypes all that much. Yeah. I rather examine how we really are and what we could be and what we will be. At the same time, of course, I examine the English because they're different too.
Yeah, we're not quite the same as our stereotypes, and we probably don't really know what we don't know. We don't understand how we are, I imagine.
I think that is a good point. The English don't really, because basically you invested so much in that British Empire.
Yeah.
That when that crumbled and went away, and all the Scots don't really want to be associated with
Or the Welsh. Or the Northern Irish.
And you're left with just your country and just
England.
Really, yeah, England. Thinking, what was that again?
Yeah, we don't really know. We don't. I think
who are we? Yeah.
The English are really quite confused. Like they.
And so are we. I think we're very similar that way. And,
yeah.
And the class. Classic English gentleman, that's an anachronism.
That doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist.
People keep trying to tell me that I'm a gentleman, right? Like, a lot of my students who I meet, like, I lived in Japan for 2 years, and I often got kind of like, oh, you are very English gentleman, right? Which, first of all, isn't grammatically correct, and secondly, isn't really factually correct either, because I'm not a gentleman. You know, I have quite a lot of that yobbish element to me.
Do you?
Just like most people do.
Like English are perfect gentlemen. They go on holidays and smash up bars.
Well, they don't do it they don't just do it on a holiday. They do that sort of stuff at home every day on a Saturday night in their local town. But I mean, these days I'm a bit more sensible. I'm more approaching this sort of gentleman about town kind of thing. But anyway. Right. Anyway, see if we can try and get some
back on
structure to this. So you're not really talking about German stereotypes, you're just talking about the truth and what the German identity really is.
Yes.
Okay, so now I've got a list of questions here, and one of my questions on this subject is, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you about stereotypes.
No, no problem.
Because everyone's kind of obsessed with this. It's difficult to talk about national identities without dealing with stereotypes first.
Right? I'm aware of that, no problem.
Yeah.
I've dealt with this a lot, don't worry.
You're very experienced in this, like having, you know, travelled around and been to many different countries and things. What is the stereotype of German people?
That's one thing. I think it's a little bit different everywhere you go. Mm. I think it's hard to... There are the stereotypes that we have no sense of humour, that we're basically cold and don't have any feelings. I think that is there. That we all wear lederhosen, so basically leather trousers and little green hats, and which is complete rubbish, because you know 87% of our population find this ridiculous. All the parts outside of Bavaria. And I actually think that's probably it was the American occupation zone. So basically they brought back what they saw and put it, you know, into the Hollywood movies. And all of a sudden the whole world thinks that we also always, you know, dance around in little green trousers slapping each other.
Right.
And
so that stupid image is just from one tiny corner of Germany from, you know, many years ago.
Yes,
and that
it
was
is.
Exported by American soldiers.
I think so. Well, that is, you know, but you've probably seen it. That was, you know, about that, you know, the rain barrels of beer that we drink, huge glasses of beer.
But to be honest, though, there is the Oktoberfest.
Yes,
you do see quite a lot of images.
Like I said, but that is Bavaria.
Right.
That is a part, and it does exist. It is a part of Germany. But that's one thing about Germany. We weren't really one country until 1871.
Right.
And all little regions are very, very different from the other.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of variety. You have, if you go to the Rhine area, people are very jolly, very lively, love to party. If you go to, you know, to Swabia, they're much more, you know, very, you know, precise, much more German in a way. Great engineers, but also they'll sue you if your garden gnome is 2 inches too far towards the street or whatever. You
really
know?
Sort of anal in a way.
But lots of variety, and there's not really one certain German, but that is one stereotype.
So just listing the stereotypes before we kind of throw them away.
Yeah.
What did you mention? They have no sense of humour, that they're cold and have no emotions.
Extremely efficient.
Extremely efficient and punctual, right?
Punctual, of course. I was late earlier when we met.
I was surprised, to be honest, but yes. You know. No, I wasn't that surprised. You're not Swiss, I mean, you know.
That's true. Let's see what else. You're English, you have lots of
The lederhosen thing. What else do we have about the Germans?
The war, of course. You're always
there's the whole war. The German soldier kind of image that if you meet a German, you kind of.
And we wear, you know, on holidays we wear white socks and sandals.
That's right, kind of.
We put our beach towels onto sun lounges to reserve them at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Unreasonably competitive about sunbathing areas in Mediterranean holiday resorts.
Yes, and that is partly true, and I hate it and am ashamed of it, even though I've worked in an English hotel and the English do just the same now, but I think we started
The fact is that the Germans are better at it than the English.
No, we just get up earlier. But that's the horrible thing now. Sometimes you go to the pool and everything's reserved and nobody's there because they just come down at 5 a.m, put their towels out, and then they're too knackered to wake up till 2 o'clock and bloody come there to the pool. So don't get me started on that. So that's more or less, I think we've got it covered.
I think we know, like, for some reason, a lot of these German stereotypes are the same in many countries, that particularly what we've already said. But in England, we love the idea that in Germany you don't have a sense of humour.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a really popular stereotype in this country, because we we're very proud of the fact that we've got a sense of humour. We think that
we need it.
Yeah, we do need it. Yeah, I guess it's like, but we're for some reason very proud of this idea that we've got a monopoly on comedy, that kind of thing. But okay, so which of the stereotypes are true and which are not true?
I think Some of them are, I think there's probably a kernel of truth to most of them, but like if you say Germans are extremely orderly, that is on the one hand, I mean this can be an extreme or not an extreme. On the one hand, that means that our buses run punctually, things are normally are done the way you would expect. On the other hand, can be very unforgiving about even being a minute late. And so basically, it's you know, like everything. You can have order that is good, and you can take it into the extreme. I think the stereotype that we don't have a sense of humor is wrong. And I think you have to look at what you really mean, because Germans like to laugh and have fun like any other nation. I think we value things functioning a lot. Yes. So basically, when it comes to things that should work, you know, we don't want to laugh about it, we want to get it done. And
can we just look at an example of that for a moment? Like you're talking about Germans maybe value things functioning well. So let's just take an example. Let's say if you go into the toilet in the pub or something, and there's a hand drying machine, and in a bathroom in a bathroom in Germany, the hand dryer. Let's say for example, one day the hand dryer doesn't work. What might be the reaction of the people who use it?
I think an English person would normally, if there was a friend with them, might crack some sort of joke about it, or just simply and just wipe their hands.
Well, just be like typical, bloody.
Yeah,
typical,
I would probably complain. Yeah, typical. And you understand, would probably moan.
Yeah.
And then go out and go back to the beer and do nothing. A German person, if we talk about the average people, rather stereotypical people, a German person would most definitely go to the owner of the bar and complain.
Really?
Because I think in general, not all the time, of course. I mean, basically, I think when you talk about stereotypes, some of them are true. Well, basically, what you're saying is not really that everybody in the country is like that. I think it's a better way of putting it is that a person who is like that, a person who values order and clarity and efficiency and things working and all of that, somebody who values that would be very happy in Germany. Right. I think that's a better way of putting it, because I'm not very punctual. I'm quite relaxed about many things because I've lived in other countries too. But there are other people who just might enjoy living in Germany a lot for these reasons. People would definitely complain because they want the order back. Well, order is very important to Germans. Basically, something is out of order and you have to put it back. It's not like you just tolerate that. You just go there, that you complain until this is fixed.
Yeah.
And and then it works again. You give that person hell until it is fixed, because that way everything functions. Because if everybody just turns a blind eye, people just will things will just go to hell. Yeah.
In the UK, if the hand dryer wasn't working, like you said, the English people would probably be like, oh, bloody typical, the hand dryer's not working.
Yeah.
Or they'd make some sort of joke about it, but they wouldn't then go to the manager and complain about the hand dryer. They would just wipe their hands on their jeans and then just carry on. But the result is that in the UK, a lot of stuff doesn't work and things kind of run slightly badly, and there's a lot of this kind of poor quality of stuff happening that you might not get in Germany.
And sometimes you would think that you actually appreciate, you value humour so highly that you sometimes think you appreciate things not functioning because they give you a reason to be humorous about them. In Germany, I do hate when people complain too much. I mean, I don't, in the extreme, I really dislike that about my country, that we can't relax about that. Everything needs to be, like it should be, and the order must be maintained, and this must be fixed now, and I'm not happy until it happens. Now, if you go to German hotels and English hotels in New York or wherever, always, and my English ex-girlfriend used to tell me that all the time, so it's not just me thinking that, you will always find that if you have a three-star hotel British and a three-star hotel German, the German one will be a lot better, because people simply give the manager hell if things don't work, which is why things work.
That's maybe part of this.
But they're really annoying.
Things work. It's, so in Germany, maybe one truth that we could, I guess, glean from this is that in Germany, things tend to work very well, and yet, on the other hand, people tend to be a bit more annoying.
But we're talking about an extreme here. Most of my friends are young, and when we might tell the manager, older Germans would go and really complain and, you know, have a field day complaining.
Yeah.
And younger people might just go there, but probably would still take care that something happens about it, but would not be so obnoxious as some average Germans can be. But then again, I think average people in every country are
Sort of a lot of British people would be incredibly annoying, and we love complaining and moaning about things too. It's pretty complicated business, this stereotype stuff. One thing about humour, this idea that German people don't have a sense of humour, is obviously wrong.
Yeah,
because they love laughing and they love kind of making jokes about things. I think for me it's more a case of how much people value things. So in the UK, we value humour maybe higher than in some other countries. We put a very high value on it.
Yeah, I think it's essential to your identity. You give it a very, very special place in your identity.
Especially now, after certain really successful shows on TV, which we love very much, like the Monty Python shows and other comedy shows.
I grew up with that stuff.
Yeah, we're really proud of those programs, and so that has also reinforced this thing about British humour that we're so proud of.
I think, however, that you have to differentiate between two different things, a sense of comedy of what's funny, and a sense of humour means, I think, is more a matter of taking it easy and laughing something off. If something bad happens, that you can laugh about it. And I love that about the Brits. Whatever bad happens, you can still, you know, see the lighter side of it.
Yeah.
And that is and that is beautiful. And the important thing, I think, also about Britain, I think it's not only me, it's sociologist Kate Fox, I think,
says that. She wrote Watching the English.
Exactly, great book. Yeah. She says, makes it how ubiquitous it is. It's everywhere. Yeah. Sense of humour, you can't speak to an English person for a minute without there being some joke in it, and some, you know, seeing the other side of things in a funny way. And it's, I love that. I think it's great. But also, I think sense of humour, In German, there's actually a saying about a sentence. Humor ist, wenn man trotzdem lacht. Humor is if you laugh anyway. Like, I think it's that humor proves itself when something bad happens to you, and you laugh anyway. And basically, that you cope with the harshness of life by seeing the lighter side and by laughing at the horrible things that might happen to you. That is real humor. Laughing about yourself too, laughing at the human condition. That is because everybody can be funny, but actually taking a joke or seeing the funny side of things to make a life more livable. Yeah. I think that is what a real sense of humor is, and I think in that way the Brits are great, because you do see lots of things, or take them with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Sometimes also, you know, it can be a way of avoiding actual feelings.
Yes. But that's interesting.
Can I just finish that one? Because I think my friend and manager Rebecca said something like this to me the other day. She's German too, and she said about die Deutschen verstehen keinen Spaß, which means they don't understand fun, or well, I don't know, but what it means is they can't take a joke. I think that's the Germans,
right?
And I think
Germans can't take a joke.
I think, yeah, of course you can't generalize, but I do think when the English poking fun at us for the war or whatever, I think as a nation, we're too insecure as a nation. We don't know who we are, basically. It's a long story that I can't really go into, but I think basically because we're as a nation, or as a nation state, as Germany, we only existed since 1871.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we were there, and England had an empire, and France were really big, and we're like, we're here too, and we want respect. And we were the new guy on the point. We basically, in 1870, if you asked somebody, what is your nation, they would have said Bavarian or Swabian, or I'm from the Palatinate or whatever. Yeah. They would have never said German. I mean, there were, you know, efforts to make it one Germany, and to be honest, for a long time, efforts by very liberal and leftist people and you know, thinkers and poets who tried to, and in the end it was militarist Prussia who actually did the whole thing.
Right.
But basically there was a notion that there is something like Germany, you know, wherever German is spoken. But basically, if you're in southern Germany, people, the way they spoke, wouldn't have understood somebody in northern Germany. And basically, I think there's still, I believe, a big insecurity of who are we really, and do we get enough respect?
Right.
And I think because of that, we have difficulties as a nation to take a joke, because we simply, on the national level, which sounds a bit weird, but we don't have the confidence really. Now, there might be lots of people, lots of German people maybe disagreeing with me. It's not a personal or individual thing, but I think as a nation, we're like a child more or less. Especially now, it's the first time ever in history, ever, that we have one democratic, unified Germany in the middle of friends, we're with undisputed borders. Because that is the one big thing. That's, I think, why we love order, because our history was chaos. In the middle of Europe, people invading right, left and centre. In 1789, what is now Germany consisted of 1,789 tiny and slightly bigger little countries, and everybody constantly fighting with each other. 30 years war reduced Germany by, I don't know, 35% or something. It was just madness and pure chaos, which I think is why we value order so highly, because we didn't have it historically. And those are things that persist in national psyche. And I think also that now this, who are we really? Like I said, now, first time, one Germany, everybody says, you know, these are Germany's borders and everything is fine. We don't go, oh, we want a bit more to these. We don't do that.
Yeah.
And we're in the middle of friends, countries.
You're bordering
and,
countries.
And all of a sudden, we don't have to worry about, you know, much. And we're one and we're democratic and everything is really, we're really where we should be. Mm. And we're great economically. We're doing well. I mean, we're hard workers. We're clever. We have lots of great things going for us.
Mm.
And but all of a sudden, we're just here. And for the first time, we're like a child, really. All of a sudden, we're here now. And who the hell are we? And what are we doing now? It's just, I think that, you know, we still have to find out. We have to make up new stories about ourselves, new identities, who we want to be, and just stop worrying about what we used to be. We don't have to be the annoying, order-loving people. We can be something still kind of like that, but we can, I think we can renew ourselves. I think we can be pretty cool.
Yeah.
And me saying that, I ran away from that for a long time. Yeah. I think now, it's not even that bad to me, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it must be very tough after what happened 60 years ago. It must have been really tough.
Yeah, I remember.
It must have been really, really tough.
I know,
I wasn't born. I don't. Yeah. I mean, for a country to come out of that, obviously it's all completely in the past now, but it must be very difficult for a nation to deal with that, you know, the war and that feeling like... In the UK, there's this old thing which doesn't really... I mean, it still is used a bit these days, but was mainly sort of in the immediate post-war period, particularly up until like the 80s, which is where if an English person, if you met a German, you would say, don't mention the war.
Mm.
Shh, don't mention the war, because it would just be really, really uncomfortable and really awkward to like mention the war. And there's that famous episode of Fawlty Towers, the comedy show, where Basil Fawlty sort of says, don't mention the war, and then of course he gets a knock on the head and goes crazy and he does mention the war.
And Gil steps right. Episode, it's really funny.
It is, it's fantastic, but to what extent is that valid? Is that phrase, don't mention the war, valid? Is it okay to mention the war?
Yes. I mean, well, okay. That's a very large topic.
Yeah. We don't have that much time, Paco. I think we're probably coming to the end of this. But just last, finally, on the subject of the war, because I think it's probably one of the most important things. Yeah. You know. Yeah. What's the sort of feeling in Germany about the war now?
I think that is one thing that Germans are one of the few things that we're a bit pissed off with the British for. This mentioning the war, because if you have your average English or British tourists, the not very educated ones, they were just, you know, annoyed Germans with that. I thought that don't mention the war was only a phrase or only a quote from that series. Yeah. I didn't know that people said that anyway.
I don't know if... I think they may say it because of the show.
I think they do. I'm not sure. I might be completely wrong. Now, one thing is that I think immediately after the war, Germans try to forget, because those are probably the largest crimes against humanity ever. The most horrible things ever happened there. Yeah. I mean, of course, you can always say, you know, the Belgians in the Congo killed like 10 to 15 million Congolese.
And
lots of
Khmer Rouge and, you know, Stalin. And...
Yeah, and the Brits in the Empire. I mean,
yeah, we did our fair share of it.
Till the 60s, you did a few nasty things in Kenya.
We did lots of terrible things in the Boer War.
The thing is, I mean, you can't compare these things. It's not the premiership. Oh, you know, we're better than you at genocide. It shouldn't be that. I mean, I think the Holocaust was singular in so far as it was systematic. It was just a systematic plan, in a way, very, very German. That's the horrible thing about it. It's just order, system, plan. This is how we did systematic eradicate or attempted eradication of a people, which is just so inherent or intrinsically evil that it's indescribable. Now, that happened after the war. However, the people actually did it, never really felt bad about it, I think. And there's some who were forced to probably did.
That's the mystery of the people who are actually involved in the decision making. Yeah. Like, you know,
I mean, lots were then luckily executed by the Americans and British. But I think generally on the level of the German people, nobody dealt with that afterward. The country was destroyed. Everybody went into, let's, you know, build this up and, you know, make lots of money. And economically, we did the economic miracle. We did just amazing. And nobody really talked about it or thought about it. My mum's history book ended in 1914, I believe, or 18, really? At the end of the First World War. It was nothing there. In 68, you can say lots of bad things about them. You know, there was this student revolutions, leftist revolutions, and one thing that they did was say, hang on a minute, something happened there. We'd like to talk about that. What the fuck happened? Why are we not talking about this? And that's when it kind of started, that we started dealing with our past. And we've done so a lot. Well, since then, I know in my school, I learned about the Holocaust for you know, all my school life. And it's horrible. I've never done anything. I try to be a good person. I have lots of Jewish friends, Muslim friends. I just try to be simply a good person, tolerant, and all of that. But basically, all my life, I've been taught to feel guilty for something I simply haven't done.
You had no involvement.
So it is a weird situation that we... I've been taught on my little sister when she was 10, and she's a very sensitive girl. I mean, she got shown pictures of Holocaust deaths when she was 10, a little girl, and she was just destroyed her inside. I think, I mean, you have to deal with this. You mustn't just go, never mind that. Because, you know, it is very important. But I feel bad about...
You've just been lumbered as a generation, or your generation or the generation before, were just lumbered with this terrible kind of guilt.
Yeah, things that other people did and that don't even want to do. I would have much rather learned about the great things that Jews did in Germany. Without Jewish people, Germany would have been half the fun, half as clever. As, yeah. I would have preferred to learn a lot about that. Well, now, one thing, to get back to, you know, don't mention the war. I think that's very difficult to deal with, because basically we're not talking about mentioning the war when we talk about Brits. We're talking about winding the Germans up with the war.
Yeah.
Basically, you lost the war, we beat you, we won.
We think in the UK that we won the war. You know, it's so stupid. Like, no one won.
Well, not really. I mean, you did have help from the Americans and Russians.
And to be honest,
after that, you didn't fare so well. That was your last.
We were totally screwed. We lost the war in a way as well. No, like, we were totally fucked by it.
Yeah, but I said the thing is, though, the point I'm trying to make is that from a more, if I'm only half a moral person, and I am a moral person, I'm happy that we lost the wars. It's great that you beat us. It's great that you liberated us, basically, because I don't associate myself with the Nazis.
Yeah, yeah.
I love everybody who was against them.
Yeah.
But I'm taught in school, basically, I noticed this recently, when I talk about all that, I say what we did in the war, and then when I talk about the Stauffenberg and all the people who tried to kill Hitler, I said, oh, what they did is great. I say we when I talk about that. Why the fuck is that? And it's horrible that basically I've been brought up to, you know, subconsciously to say that.
Yeah.
Now, basically, if you wind me up with the war, it's a very weird thing, because nobody likes to lose a war. It's you know, you feel like it's humiliated and bad.
Yeah.
At the same time, and that's the neurotic weird thing about it, you have to basically, if you say, oh, we beat you, we kicked the shit out of you in the war, I have to say, oh yes, I know, and thank you very much.
Yeah.
That is just the weird thing.
Yeah.
You have to be happy to have had the shit kicked out of you, which is weird. Impossible to deal with in a way.
We don't know. In the UK, it's sickening, actually. Whenever, like, England play against Germany in football, you get in the tabloid newspapers, there's some Second World War reference.
Yeah, and that's...
And it's totally sickening, really.
Yeah, that is something... I think we... The Germans generally like the English, and we call England, or Britain, the island. Everybody will know that this is Britain. And we kind of like you guys.
Yeah, you like our humour and stuff like that.
And before, the royal family is German, and there were lots of ties for centuries, till 1890, more or less, when it started to go bad. But that is probably the one thing, because of what we see of you guys, if we know Shakespeare, and we see the Sun newspaper, and basically to see this written about us, it's just very offensive.
Yeah,
and that is the one thing that most Germans would probably say, well, screw them. That is what we really take personal. That's what we don't like, I would say.
I totally agree.
Hard to have a sense of humour about, because it's not even funny.
Yeah.
I mean,
unfortunately, in this country, we've got like a terrible culture of tabloid journalism, which is probably the worst. They use humour as an excuse, basically, and they use puns as an excuse, bad puns, getting away with terrible things. And you're right about the way that we value humour as like a really great thing. It's like, I feel it in myself. I almost let them forgive the Sun and the News of the World for like the things they say in their papers, for just because they do some jokes, in their stuff.
But their puns, it's not even clever. It's just I don't know, but I don't find it.
Yeah.
Really that funny. It's not witty or anything.
They're awful publications, and they're owned by Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, or the Daily Mail is even worse. Let's not even go there.
Yeah, we've got some horrifically awful newspapers in this country. I'm very pleased that I can actually say that as well.
Yeah, I'm very
going
proud
back
of
to that thing of like, in some countries, if they're lucky enough to be able to listen to this kind of thing, they wouldn't be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you say that, because it's normally where you can't ever say the Germans and the English, and I probably have a lot more in common with you than with some German thug or whatever. It's what are nations really? I mean, as long as you can communicate, and I think you have good people well, this is a bit of a banal thing to say, but you do have good people everywhere.
There are good people everywhere, absolutely, but something about systems, something about, I don't really know how to explain it really, but something about systems and the fact that we need to be organised as people in society, that can go wrong, you know.
Yeah, but I think there's also, there could be, you know, like friendly competition, and you know, let's be friends and still, you know, have, you know, just wind each other up or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that one big problem is that you guys are so, you need us Germans, because we are part of your identity.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
That's your finest hour, winning the war, and after that, not that much great stuff happened, to be honest.
Except the Beatles and world music.
No, the world, you know, with the World Cup also when you beat us. But basically, you made yourself out to be everything that the Germans are not.
Yeah.
And, so, and without nice Germans, all of a sudden, it's only half the
and
fun.
Also,
then you
you've
really
got like
have
a really
deal.
Good economy, you know. Well, maybe I don't know at the moment, but
yeah,
certainly with like your industries, like you, at least in Germany, you produce things. You're producing cars, like the best cars in the world, really. You know.
Yeah, probably.
Germany and Japan, ironically enough, are the ones who are producing like the best cars. Yeah, and in Britain, I don't know. To an extent, we are living in a dream where we still hold on to this idea that we were the best and then we won the war and all that kind of thing.
I would absolutely agree with that. And I think you have such great potential. I mean, look at history. I mean, you've had fantastic scientists and writers and all of that. There's great potential, but as long as you keep living in that dream, you won't use all your energy.
Yeah.
Because right now, the economic state you're in, you will have to work hard and smart
absolutely.
to get on track.
We're living in the past, a lot of English people, really. And they don't realise it. They don't realise that they are, but they're still living on this idea that Britain is still a great nation, like it was over 100 years ago. It's not the same as it used to be.
And you are potential-wise, but no, and you do have nuclear weapons and whatever. But you simply—it's just like the England football team. Every World Cup, the newspapers write that we're going to be world champions. Everybody knows they're not good enough for that, and they don't produce enough young players. They have, you know, it doesn't matter how many foreigners they have been, if just produce good English players, young players, then they will have enough. Like Germany, we were at the same point 10, 15 years ago, and then we decided, as we do, let's make a plan. And it was
and it worked, because you absolutely kicked our asses at the last World Cup.
It was beautiful. Sorry.
It was horrible. It was just totally horrible. But in a way, halfway through the game, I was like, yeah, fuck this English team. They're all overpaid twats.
Yeah, the thing is, which is, you know, 15, we had exactly the same thing. And then kind of we made a play, and every club in the Bundesliga, you know, in the first football league, had to invest a certain amount into young players. Every club had to have a youth academy in order to be allowed to play in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Simply, you don't have that. Sorry, you can't be there anymore.
Great.
And that way, now what we're producing, we haven't even seen the end of it. It's only starting. It's mental. But in Britain, for some reason, every time it's the same. The Sun, of course, again, writes, we're going to be great, we're going to kick everybody's ass, and all of a sudden, we're not that good. Who would have expected that? Just like 4 years ago. Weird.
But at least it's a story. Story both ways.
Yeah, but we have to do everything different and, you know, just change everything we do. Oh, yeah, let's do that. And then the Premiership starts again, and they do nothing.
Yeah.
And then still thinking of 1966 and... Come on, get your game together. You're a great nation. You're just not doing very much right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, I think that is pretty much all we've got time for.
Okay.
Thank you
very
much.
Can I just plug my show? If anybody would like to come along, I'm writing the show right now. I think it's going to be very funny. It's going to be very instructive and new. It's called The 5-Step Guide to Being German. And it will be performed at the Brighton Fringe Festival on the 9th, 10th, 11th, 16th and 18th of May of this year at 7:45 in the evening, and then all through August, that means from the 5th to the 28th of August, except for Saturdays, every evening at 6 o'clock. At the Gothic Room in Three Sisters. Okay, and then Brighton, just by the way, it's at the Hobgoblin. So,
okay, fantastic. I will put all of the relevant details for that show on the website.
Oh, may I say,
I'll mention it at the beginning of the podcast as
great.
Well,
one more thing, please. Please, especially if you're German or English, you have anything to say about this, and when will this go out?
Well, as soon as possible.
Okay.
In fact, hopefully I'll get it up within the next couple of days.
Great. In the next few days, my website for the show will go live. It's simply germancomedy.com, www.germancomedy.com, and there you can actually contribute to the show. You can, you know, answer a questionnaire, send me an email, tell me your opinions, write something into our storybook, which is basically for you to post anything you have to say on this topic, and hopefully you have lots of interesting things to say, and I might see you there. I think it's going to be brilliant. And to everybody else out in the world, it's been fun. Take care. Bye bye.
So that's the interview. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to check out Paco's website, which is www.germancomedy.com. And there you can actually leave comments on his site. You can answer his questionnaire about German people. And also you can read other information. Do go and see his show. I highly recommend it. That's it from this episode. If you have any questions about the content from this episode, then please email me. My email address is luketeacher@hotmail.com. Now, I do try to reply to most of my emails that I receive, but I'm getting so many these days that I don't always get a chance to reply to everyone. So if I haven't replied to all of you, I do apologise, but I just don't have time to sit there all day going through all of the emails I receive. I get so many. I suppose what I should do is just write a very, very quick reply to everyone, just saying, hello, thanks for your email, I got it. But I do love getting your email, so do continue to do that. This has been another episode of Luke's English Podcast. That's it from me today. Thank you very much. Bye, 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 bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.